Now we're going to continue with this special day programming here in CFRU 93.3.
An impossible place for justice. When it comes to Cuba, Miami is an impossible place for justice, Antonio Guerrero told the judge at his sentencing. By that time, the defense had filed no less than 5 motions to move the trial to a more neutral site. It was obvious that Miami was the last place in the world the 5 Cubans could get a fair trial. Social science backs up Guerrero's observations. One of the nation's foremost experts in the Cuban exile phenomenon, Dr. Lisandro Perez, wrote, quote, "The possibility of selecting 12 citizens of Miami-Dade County who can be impartial in a case involving acknowledged agents of the Cuban government is virtually zero," unquote. In no other district would the defendants face prospective jurors, at least 20% of whom were men and women who had left Cuba because they disagreed with the government the defendants were trying to protect. Among those reporting for jury service was a director of the Cuban American National Foundation, which provided funding for Basulto's flights into Cuban airspace, as well as more obviously terroristic ventures. He was eliminated only because of what even the judge characterized as his, quote, "bizarre behavior," unquote. In no other jurisdiction would the defendants be forced to use 9 of their 15 peremptory challenges just to eliminate Cuban exiles or their children from the jury. In no other jurisdiction would they face at least 16 prospective jurors who personally knew someone identified in the indictment as a victim or a family member. One told how Basulto was afforded official VIP status at the local airport. Only in Miami would these defendants be tried by a jury drawn from a community permeated by what Dr. Perez termed an exile ideology, which favors U.S. military intervention to topple Cuba's government and supports armed invasions by exiles. Attitudes confirmed by independent polling unrelated to the case. So well known are these positions and the consequences of diverging from them that prospective jurors readily admitted they would be afraid of retaliation, quote, "If I didn't come back with a verdict in agreement with what the Cuban community feels, how they feel the verdict should be," unquote. Miami stands alone as the only city in the United States where Cuban musicians cannot perform and Cuban artists cannot display their art without meeting riotous protest, and organizers of academic conferences require special protection because Cuban academics will be attending. Miami is the only city in the United States that would prefer to cancel international sporting events to having Cuban athletes present. Even the prestigious Latin Grammys had to be transferred out of Miami twice after violence and threats of violence caused it to be moved to another venue. Miami-Dade County is the only jurisdiction that passed an unconstitutional ordinance requiring all who sought funds for the arts swear that they had no dealings with Cuba for the past 10 years. It was against this backdrop that the trial proceeded in Miami. Lacking proof of criminal conduct, the prosecution charged conspiracy, controlled the evidence the jury was allowed to consider, and committed a gross act of misconduct in addressing the jury.
Please tell me the reason behind the colors that you fly. Love just one nation, and the whole world we divide. You say you're sorry, there is no other choice. God bless the people now who cannot raise their voice. Chase down all our enemies, bring them to their knees. We can bomb the world to pieces, but we can't bomb it into peace. Whoa, we may even find a solution to hunger. Violence brings one thing,
more and more of the same. Military madness, smell of flesh and burning pain. So I sing out to the masses, stand up if you're still sane. All of us gone crazy, I sing this one refrain. We can chase down all our enemies, bring them to their knees. We can bomb the world to pieces, but we can't bomb it into peace. Whoa.
Cubans are not the largest minority in Miami, but the largest single ethnic group, period. Unlike most immigrants, they represent not the poor and oppressed, but the most wealthy and privileged sector of their homeland. In Miami, their right-wing power brokers ensure that only the candidates who adopt the most hard line with respect to Cuba progress to represent the community at the polls and in other seats of power. They are also among the main employees and the major financial contributors to both political parties and control most of the local media. These facts reflect the extraordinary power of an exile community that has managed to dominate local politics in Miami-Dade in a manner unique in the immigrant experience. Within two generations, it has elected three adamantly anti-Castro Cubans to the United States Congress. One, Ileana Ross Lathan, was tipped off about the defendant's arrest as a matter of professional courtesy. Her husband is the former United States Attorney. Her campaign manager was Jeb Bush. Six of the Miami-Dade County Commissioners are Cuban, as is the mayor, the state attorney, the county police chief, the fire chief, the superintendent of schools, and the head of the public university and community college systems. According to Dr. Lisandro Perez, two events in recent years serve to galvanize this community and reinforce its peculiar exile ideology characterized by a state of war mentality. One was the controversy which inspired Miami's mayor to announce that he would not authorize local police to help carry out a federal order to return a child, Elian Gonzalez, to his father. The other was the incident at the heart of the charges against the five, the February 24, 1996 decision to shoot down the planes. René Gonzalez, Fernando Gonzalez Yort, Ramón Labanino Salazar, Gerardo Hernández Nodelo, along with Antonio Guerrero, are the five Cuban anti-terrorist fighters who have been sentenced to long-term imprisonment for defending their people and their nation against Miami terrorist groups supported by the State Department and the current Bush administration. The indictment contained 26 separate accounts, each charging from 1 to 5 defendants with specific offenses. Most were minor charges relating to the use of false identification. The most serious charges, however, alleging espionage and murder, carried life sentences. The indictment did not actually charge the defendants with those crimes, but rather conspiracy to commit them. This relieved the prosecution of actually having to prove that any defendant had actually engaged in espionage or committed murder, or even that these offenses had actually occurred. Conspiracy, called the, quote, darling of the prosecutor's nursery, unquote, makes the agreement or, quote, meeting of the minds, unquote, a criminal offense if either the purpose or the means to be used are illegal. It also makes the prosecution's job easier as it permits much evidence that would otherwise be banished as hearsay.
Aquí pensaba en seguir ganando el 100% con casas y apartamentos y echar al pueblo a sufrir y seguir de modo cruel contra el pueblo conspirando para seguirlo explotando y en eso llegó Fidel
y se acabó la diversión, llegó el comandante y mandó a parar y se acabó la diversión, llegó el comandante y mandó a parar.
The Cuban Five and Homeland Security, December 2002, Mumia Abu-Jamal. Right now, the American empire is girding its loins for a war based, at least in part, on the alleged threat posed by a third-world adversary, Iraq. Few seriously view the Ba'ath state a threat, but that's the rationale advanced to the American people. What if there was a nation, one which was relatively close and which was not only an avowed enemy, but which had staged traceable acts of war against your people that resulted in considerable loss of life and human suffering? Well, the Cubans don't need to look far. Their avowed enemy is the colossus to the north, the United States, which has not only threatened to do harm, but has done so for virtually half a century. The United States has admitted trying to kill the Cuban head of state, Dr. Fidel Castro, at least 11 times. It has invaded the nation, it has sown its soil with poisons, and spread contagion among its livestock. Again, this is what the U.S. has admitted to doing. Recently, 5 Cuban nationalists were imprisoned in Miami and charged with spying for Havana. In fact, the 5 were actively exposing and working to stop terrorist acts launched by Cuban exiles in Miami against their homeland. When they saw plots against their nation, they monitored them and reported back to their people what was happening. The Cuban government promptly passed on the reports to the U.S. government in a bid to stop the terrorism that had cost over 3,000 Cuban lives since the 1959 revolution and until 1999. The U.S. responded to their reports by rounding up the 5 and charging them and treating them as spies. They have been convicted of charges relating to their monitoring and have been sentenced to terms of 15 years to life for defending their nation from terrorist attacks. The U.S. insists that it has the right to stage a preemptive strike against a nation that has not attacked it, Iraq, and yet it is wrong to defend one's homeland from further terrorist attack. That is illogical. So for over 33 months now, 5 Cubans have languished in U.S. jails, separated like wheat from the chaff all over the nation. They are more than the rallying cry, the Cuban 5. They are real human beings. Gerardo Hernandez, Fernando Gonzalez, Ramon Lavagnino, Antonio Guerrero, and René Gonzalez. They committed no acts against the United States, nor monitored any American secrets. They entered the Miami exile community and observed the planning of acts of terrorism against the nation of their birth and reported it. That is their crime. Despite never participating in any terrorist attacks, and indeed preventing over 170 terrorist attacks against the land of their birth, they have been consigned to U.S. gulags, One wonders, is there really a war against terrorism? For if there is, how can it be furthered by the imprisonment of those who fought to stop it? As for those in the Miami media, the Robbie Blancos, as they're called, rabid anti-Castro Cubans, they have actively engaged in terror against the Cuban populace, but they have nothing to fear from the Americans, for the U.S. government indirectly supports and indeed funds their efforts. People are organizing around the nation to demand freedom for the Cuban Five. Please contact them and help give life to this effort. By doing so, you will be opposing terrorism, for real, and supporting an anti-terrorist group of people who only want to defend their nation from foreign-backed aggression. Free the Five.
Aprendimos a quererte desde la histórica altura, donde el sol de tu bravura le puso cerco a la muerte. Aquí se queda la clara, la entrañable transparencia de tu querida presencia, comandante Che Guevara. Aprendimos a quererte desde la histórica altura, donde el sol de tu bravura le puso cerco a la muerte. Aquí se queda la clara, la entrañable transparencia de tu querida presencia, comandante Che Guevara. Tu mano gloriosa y fuerte sobre la historia dispara, cuando todo Santa Clara se despierta para verte. Aquí se queda la clara, la entrañable transparencia de tu querida presencia, comandante Che Guevara. Vienes quemando la brisa con soles de primavera para plantar la bandera con la luz de tu sonrisa. Aquí se queda la clara, la entrañable transparencia de tu querida presencia, comandante Che Guevara. Tu amor revolucionario te conduce a nueva empresa, donde esperan la firmeza de tu brazo libertario. Aquí se queda la clara, la entrañable transparencia de tu querida presencia, comandante Che Guevara.
Well, you continue to listen to CFRU 93.3. We're going to continue now listen to the biography of Antonio Guerrero, one of the Cuban Five.
The third Cuban, Antonio Guerrero. Antonio Guerrero Rodriguez was born in Miami on October 18, 1958, in a humble family that returned to Cuba in the first days of 1959, after the triumph of the revolution. Tony, as his friends call him, left an imprint of his strong and friendly character in all the schools where he studied, together with many anecdotes of his meticulosity, vegetarian customs, and his hobby of practicing yoga. Due to all this, his prison mates nicknamed him the Fakir. After coming back to Cuba with his parents, he started school in 1962 and studied secondary education and senior high school at Vladimir Lenin High School in Havana. In 1974, he joined the ranks of the Young Communist League, UJC, and in 1983 majored in civil engineering with a master in airport construction in the former Soviet Union. He's remembered everywhere with a soccer ball, as a poet and as a student leader. He later entered the Communist Party of Cuba. While working in Cubana de Aviación, he married a Panamanian citizen and traveled to Panama. There he had a son and later divorced and moved to Miami, where he worked and modestly lived. There he met Margaret Becker, or Maggie, whom he married in 1998. His mother's name is Mirta Rodriguez Perez. Antonio Guerrero is serving a life sentence plus two additional verdicts of 5 years and 8 months at Florence Prison in Colorado. He is intentionally kept away from the rest of his fellow companions, as if physical distance could destroy the union existing between people whose main link is their common ideas and patriotism. His lawyer, Jack Blumenfeld, has stated his displeasure by the transfer of the five Cubans to far-apart prisons. He also stated, according to a journalistic research, that Denver Prison, where Guerrero was located, had witnessed several prisoner homicides perpetrated by guards. During a roundtable on Cuban television, participants compared the conditions in which this fighter against terrorism lives to the luxurious prisons where self-confessed and proven terrorists such as anti-Cuban Luis Posada Carriles receive, in Panama, visits from their mafia friends from Miami and plan new terrorist actions against Cuba. The five young Cubans sentenced in Miami were first moved, under strong watch, to prisons in Atlanta and Oklahoma, and from there taken to their final prisons in different and far-apart states. Strongly handcuffed, with not enough clothes to protect them from cold weather, thirsty and hungry during the transfer, and later suffering the harsh conditions of the hole, or isolation cells, our five heroes keep their high morale and untouched honor. Nothing will make them surrender, stated journalist Randy Alonso, moderator at a roundtable broadcasted by Cuban television. President Fidel Castro stated on June 21, 2001, that those five imprisoned Cubans are political prisoners.
Well, here ending this special program today, we want to say the songs that we hear today that were Bomb the World, done by Michael Franti and Spearhead. We also listen a little pieces of Hasta Siempre, song dedicated to Che Guevara, and a little bit of Y En Eso Llegó Fidel by Trio Voces y Ritmo. Don't forget about this. This is a campaign around the world. And what you can do to help, you can go to www.freethefive.org and sign the website petition to President Bush. Tell U.S. Attorney General John Ashcroft to allow the wives and families to enter the U.S. to visit their loved ones. Make a donation for the education campaign. So this is your job, and you can continue doing build this campaign, because this is something that is going to be going on for a long time. In name of the collective of Alternativa Latinoamericana, Sergio Puchon as a coordinator, Erasmo Magulas and the fellow workers, and Maria Olaya, we wish you a good afternoon, and we're going to end this special program in the voice of Phil Ox with his song Cops of the War. I don't think this needs too much introduction, so have a good afternoon and continue to listen to CFRU 93.3.
Come get out of the way, boys. Quick, get out of the way. You'd better watch what you say, boys. Better watch what you say. We've rammed in your harbor and tied to your port, and our pistols are hungry and our tempers are short. So bring your daughters around to the fore, 'cause we're the cops of the world, boys. We're the cops of the world. We pick and choose as we please, boys. Pick and choose as we please. You'd best get down on your knees, boys. Best get down on your knees. We're hairy and horny and ready to shack, and we don't care if you're yellow or black. Just take off your clothes and lay down on your back, 'cause we're the cops of the world, boys. We're the cops of the world. Our boots are knitting a shine, boys. Boots are knitting a shine. But our Coca-Cola is fine, boys. Coca-Cola is fine. We've got to protect all our citizens fair, so we'll send a battalion for everyone there. And maybe we'll leave in a couple of years, 'cause we're the cops of the world, boys. We're the cops of the world. And dump the reds in a pile, boys. Dump the reds in a pile. You'd better wipe off that smile, boys. Better wipe off that smile. We'll spit through the streets of the cities we wreck, and we'll find you a leader that you can elect. Those treaties we signed were a pain in the neck, 'cause we're the cops of the world, boys. We're the cops of the world. And clean the Johns with a rag, boys. Clean the Johns with a rag. If you like, you can use your flag, boys. If you like, you can use your flag. We've got too much money, we're looking for toys. And guns will be guns, and boys will be boys. But we'll gladly pay for all we destroy, 'cause we're the cops of the world, boys. We're the cops of the world. Please stay off of the grass, boys. Please stay off of the grass. Here's a kick in the ass, boys. Here's a kick in the ass. We'll smash down your doors, we don't bother to knock. We've done it before, so why all the shock? We're the biggest and the toughest kids on the block, and we're the cops of the world, boys. We're the cops of the world. When we butchered your sons, boys, when we butchered your sons, have a stick of our gum, boys, have a stick of our bubble gum. We own half the world, oh say can you see, and the name for our profits is democracy. So like it or not, you will have to be free, 'cause we're the cops of the world, boys. We're the cops of the world.